Loveline, coast to coast.
Hey, everybody. It's Loveline. I'm Adam. That's Dr. Drew over there. Phone number 1-800-LOVE-191. Dr. Drew, board-certified internist and addiction medicine specialist. Tonight, I think we're going to do another night on the tragedy. It's not something that we discussed before, 3 minutes ago, maybe 2 minutes ago. Right. Producer Ann.
Well, if you'd arrived here 4 minutes ago, you might have heard from us.
Yeah. Drew and producer Ann just said, what do you feel like? And I just said, making fun of 14-year-olds with a cauliflower on their dork is not the kind of mood I'm in tonight.
No.
When the hell is it the right time to ask who did this?
It's
going to be an awful catastrophe for the next 10 years. We're going to be mourning forever. Today's the day of shock. Right. And asking who the hell did this.
Drew fired up, everybody.
I was looking at some place with me because the world is your oyster.
Oh, please, please. The kids have been through enough over the last couple of days. I don't need that. So we thought we'd dedicate another night to this topic. What could be bigger? What's had a bigger impact on this country in your lifetime or my lifetime or your grandparents' lifetime on this soil? And it's weighing heavy on all of our minds.
Yeah, it's making me sick.
I couldn't see myself talking about other things without thinking about it, so we might as well talk about it.
That's right. I also, when I heard other programs going through trying to go back to normal programming, I got offended.
Yeah.
It's just not right. It's not okay yet.
Well, it's weird. I was flipping through the channels last night, and you're seeing the coverage and the video footage and the Middle East experts, and then you flip a couple channels over, and you hit Nick at Night, and there's Three's Company, and Mr. Furley thinks Jack's gay.
Yeah.
You're just kind of watching it, and before it was just not funny, but now it takes on a surreal quality.
Yes. It's as surreal as watching the buildings go down. It's like, what is this?
The world is your oyster. I mean, because that's all the world is.
Speaking of surreal. So we'll invite your calls again tonight on this. A lot's happened since we were here last night. They're starting to, the human side of this thing's starting to come out. The pictures.
Of course. And I craved that yesterday because it was too impersonal, too just a big pow.
Really, I don't think they had a lot of it.
I saw a couple, I told you, a couple that moved me, but today I was really happy to see it. I mean, this is the story. Except I'm so mentally ill that I would go to the TV and watch until I was physically sick. So I was so upset I couldn't stand it. I'd leave, try to do something else, and I'd have to go back about 30 minutes later.
Yeah,
and then stay until I make myself sick again.
It's why,
what that is,
why we can't get anywhere on the freeway when there's a fender bender that's pulled off to the shoulder. I mean, we got a society full of rubberneckers, and I don't mean that in a bad way. I just mean, how are you supposed to sit there and read a magazine when you know there's spectacular footage and these crazy stories, mostly morbid, some heroic, but all this is going on? I mean, how can you walk away from the set?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know.
All right. So tonight, and I'm guessing we'll play it by ear, but I think tonight will be the last night, and we'll see what happens tomorrow and how we feel tomorrow.
Yeah.
But tonight we'll dedicate another night to your feelings and thoughts and how this tragedy's touched you. Nick?
Yes.
Hey, Nick, let me interrupt you 1 second. How are you doing tonight?
Adam.
Oh, me?
Yeah.
I'm fine. Why?
You seem a little more affected tonight.
Well, you know, I see the, you know, I'm starting to see the families that had the people on the plane, the loved ones on the plane in the building, starting to get some stories of people who know this guy or know that guy, you know. You know, it's the human side of it is starting to...
The real side.
The real side. I mean, when you see the actual image of the plane going into the building, it's as if, and maybe this is good, but in your mind's eye, that plane is just filled with gasoline and that building is just filled with paper and explosives.
Mm.
You know what I mean? You
don't, set.
Yeah, it's like there's a plywood and Luon all over the place, and we put a bunch of gasoline inside this model plane. I mean, it's when you start seeing the pictures of the people with their arms around stuff, and actually, let's see, there you go. So Nick tried to get his call in, now I got to put him on hold. They were talking about one of the pilots for United or American, I can't remember what it was, And he was a guy, I said he was about 51 years old, and he was a big Angels and Lakers fan, and he was coming out here, and he used to fly F-4 Phantoms for the Navy and so on and so forth. And about a year or year and a half ago, I walked up front to a cockpit and talked to a pilot.
Wow.
Who looked like the guy in the picture. Now, it was a year and a half ago, and, you know, I'm always drunk whenever I'm on a plane, or even drop someone off at the airport. I like to get drunk.
Your judgment's better then, though.
But, yeah, it's true. I have more clarity when I'm drunk. But the guy looked like the guy I was speaking to, and the guy I spoke to, and the reason I remember it, the pilot, the United pilot I spoke to, said he flew F-4 Phantoms in the Navy, wow, in the military. And I love the F-4 Phantom. I think it's one of the best military planes we have. And hopefully some of its older brothers or younger brothers are going to go over there and bomb the hell out of whoever we got to bomb the hell out of in the next few days. But I thought to myself when I was looking at this guy and looking at the picture and thinking the guy looked kind of familiar, that may have been the guy I was speaking to, and how much I enjoyed talking to the guy and how gregarious he was. And I don't know, I started thinking about the pilots. And most pilots, a lot of you haven't had a chance to talk to some of these guys, but if you sit up in first class and they recognize you, and they love talking about military planes and stuff, because most of these guys flew in the military.
Right.
And I know a couple of pilots outside of flying. These guys are sort of go-for-it, gregarious. Yeah. They're sort of adrenaline junkie types, but they keep it together. But they're just really, they're like firemen in a sense. They're like firemen with an education, smart firemen.
Skill.
And they're really great guys. And anyway, I was thinking about this show, and this guy was 51 and used to fly for the military and all that. And I thought, geez, I wonder if it was that dude. Mm. And it made me sad. Mm. So it's starting to come home a little bit. Nick?
Yes.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I just wanted to come on and say that first and foremost, I enjoy your guys' show. I listen to you every single night.
Thanks.
And I've been on, I went on, you know, MSNBC before to defend the youth of today. And I know that there's a lot of young people listening that are extremely frightened. I myself am very nervous, so you'll have to excuse me if I'm nervous. I just wanted to say that This is still our generation. This is the time where our generation needs to realize that, you know, within the next decade, the ball's going to be in our court. And we definitely need to use your voice, use your mind, use your intelligence, and make sure, I mean, maybe this is the biggest wake-up call to ever hit history. As far as, you know, maybe we need to start thinking about ending discrimination, ending hatred, and ending...
Well, how's that go, though?
Yeah, somebody was talking to me about this today, and I thought to myself, beautiful, wonderful, but give me one example in history where people like this have responded to being embraced and loved. One, just one. They've responded to only one thing, and that's...
Is that what he's talking about?
Overwhelming force is the only thing they've ever responded to, ever. In the history of mankind.
Mm-hmm. Well, the problem is you're dealing with a, you know, fringe group of fanatics who have a bizarre and extreme
delusion,
religious. It's really just sort of narcissistic, delusional religious views.
Exactly.
And now, as screwed up as these crazy Islam guys are, go talk to a serious born again Christian and see if you can. See what you can do with them.
Mm-hmm.
You don't get through to them very good either, do you?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I mean, here's what I'm saying. We've had people on this show who were serious, devout, born-again Christians and talked to them about just using the morning after pill and the sense that that would make in terms of getting rid of some of the unwanted pregnancies and abortions and that kind of thing. They won't hear a word of it. You know why? Because they're not interested in logic. They're not interested in reason. They're interested in fanaticism, their own brand of fanaticism.
Well, I think that pretty much ended today, or, you know, in the last couple of days.
Well,
we'll see a big change.
You would hope so.
Here's the thing. We as, you know, a civilized nation would like to think that there's nothing a little counseling, a little rehab, and maybe a couple months in prison couldn't do to cure just about anybody. But the reality is some dogs need to be put down. And there's a handful of them, and they need to be put down. And when you're dealing with people who would gladly give up their own life, then all bets are off at that point. I mean, I was talking to somebody last night on the phone when I got home about 12:30 at night. And my buddy, he was saying, "Hey, this could have been some sort of neo-Nazi Timothy McVeigh type whatever." And I said, "No way." And he said, "Why not?" I said, "Those guys wouldn't have ridden the plane into the building. They would have pulled a D.B. Cooper and packed a parachute."
Right.
White guys don't do that. They bail out at the last second.
Well, yeah, but I saw some interviews today where some of the fundamentalists, they're taught that they get 10 wives for every non-Islam they kill.
Yeah, well, no, they get virgins.
10 of them for every one.
I know, it's funny, though. That's a bizarre religion, which is, look, you kill enough Anglos, you could rape virgins for eternity.
Oh, wow. but you got to understand the thinking. I mean, that's their thinking. So
yeah.
Our job is to understand it.
It's hard to call it thinking, but I know what you mean. Paul?
Yes.
You're 17?
Yeah, first off, let's say my heart goes out to the people who might still be trapped in the World Trade Center, in the Pentagon, yeah. And for the families, the hundreds of thousands of people who are going to directly know those people.
Mm. Yeah, you know, it's just hard to, and I agree with you, you know, we've had buildings collapse, we've had subways collapse, and we've had, you know, five-story buildings collapse.
We've had
earthquakes.
Planes go down and 400 people die. You know what I mean?
Drew.
Is that what you're saying?
No, you're crapping on my point.
Go ahead.
My point is we've not had 110-story buildings collapse.
That's right.
If it's a situation where there's a floor, two floors, three floors above you, and the building comes down,
it's a big deal.
And maybe we can find you. Maybe. But when there's 108 stories above you, you're dead.
Well,
I mean, that's what's starting to happen here.
Let's say you're on the fifth floor and the building collapsed. Well, what's the chance that you're going to survive that fall? Just five floors. Forget 100 floors.
But,
five floors.
But I'm saying,
and
that
then 100 floors on top of that of concrete comes down on you.
When you're trapped underneath something, it's all about It's all about how much debris is above you, and we've never had a situation where there was this much debris.
Yeah.
So I think it's starting to dawn on everyone over there that's involved with the rescue effort that I don't think they're going to find anybody from this point on. Could you imagine? Paul, what was your question or comment, though?
Well, I just wanted, I fear for what our country is becoming and what we're going to do. Like, I saw people on the TV saying today how we should bomb the hell out of Afghanistan.
Well, you saw one the congressman say that,
I think. One congressman, and it's just like, there would be no difference between us and the terrorists.
I think, Paul, you're from Washington, D.C., right?
Well, I live, 7 miles outside.
I think the response is going to be calculated and measured. I really do. I don't think it's going to be just wild shooting.
And people say there's no difference between us and them if we start engaging in that sort of behavior. But let me explain something. If two guys are standing around waiting for a bus, and one guy takes a swing and whacks the other guy in the head who's standing there reading the newspaper, and then the guy who's reading the newspaper whacks him back, there is a big difference. They were both standing there. One guy whacked the other guy while he wasn't looking. Punching back, there's a difference. There's a big difference. Do you know what I'm saying?
But you don't want to punch everybody who's standing in the line with you waiting for the bus.
Yeah. No, but if that's his group and you have your group and both groups are just standing there waiting for the bus, the one group throws a rock first. You know what? Innocent people are going to get hurt, and that's the sad reality of it.
Could I just quickly say, being from Maryland, we are near a lot of, Civil War sites.
Mm.
And, I've been to Antietam, which is the bloodiest battle in U.S. history. And, 23,000 people died.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever. And that's what it just keeps on reminding me of. That whatever the death toll is, 15,000 or something, I can't even imagine.
It's close to Antietam, or maybe more than Antietam.
Yeah. Thanks, Paul. It may be, man. They're talking about 20,000.
I mean, just imagine that. But those were military people going in to die. These are civilians sitting at work.
Yeah, I know.
That's a very different thing. That's why I got to tell you.
It's a big difference, I think, emotionally for you. And to me,
that's a massive
The average age of the guys who died in the Civil War were 15 years younger than the people that went in the World Trade Center. But yes, they were caught up in it. I mean, they volunteered for it.
I had a strange reaction. The magnitude of this thing made me, like, just sort of ready. I'm not afraid. You know what I mean? I'm just prepared for whatever now.
Drew's going to pack his BMW up with fertilizer and drive it into the Lebanese embassy or something.
Whatever it takes. Well, I usually worry about my own safety, my kids' safety. I worry about that stuff like crazy. I'm like, I have no fear. I'm ready for whatever comes with this.
All right, Drew.
I'm surprised myself. On the other hand, you know, I'm very emotional. I'm still terribly disturbed. I made myself sick today watching television.
You threw up?
Nearly.
Really?
I was physically and emotionally ill by the end of the day. I'm not right. I couldn't. and I feel awful for people involved with this thing.
Yeah.
I mean, this kid who just talked, I guess it was Paul that just mentioned. Yeah. Just consider that every one of those people knows 4, 10, 20 other people. So multiply 20,000 times 20. And that's how many people are directly affected by this.
Oh, and listen, Drew, how many people you know? 4?
6.
How many of those people like you?
2.
2? Your mom and your mom and who? Not your dad. Yeah, listen, you know, one of the people on the plane from Boston was this beautiful young 22-year-old chick who just got done graduating from Boston University.
Did you see that story?
Some honors.
Yes, she was from Orange County.
Yeah, and you know, and she was going to San Francisco to start a new life, start a job. And it was weird for me. It was like a mechanical thing. I was thinking, this person spent the last 4 years studying and striving and achieving and learning and working. And she prepared herself and graduated with a couple of honors and was now all this preparation and was taking the flight to go to work to begin her life, which was going to be the culmination of all this preparation she'd been doing. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you think about this girl and you think about schooling, this girl had probably been going since the sixth grade preparing for this day when she walked away from college with her degrees and her various diplomas and going to now put them to use out in the workplace, and was murdered on the way to beginning her life, essentially.
I saw that one too. And her dad seemed like a very courageous man who basically said she wanted to change the world, and he just hopes that this whole event will change things.
Yeah.
And she will not have died in vain.
Gilbert?
Yo.
You're 21. What's up?
All right, here's the deal. The other night, like Monday night, right, I had this dream, right, where I was standing in the middle of the street, and I don't really expect any of y'all to believe me, but, you know, it's like, okay, anyway, I was standing in the middle of the street in front of one of the World Trade Towers, and then the people were just, like, going about their business and, you know, doing whatever, and I was just standing there, and all of a sudden, like, everybody started, like, running and screaming, and I looked up, and I saw this plane hit the building, and, then this lady was standing next to me, and she yelled, like, right in my ear that two planes had just hit the World Trade Towers. And then I woke up, and I looked at my clock, and it was about 5 a.m., so it was before it happened. But I just passed it off. It was just a dream, right? I was just like, whatever, it's just a dream, right?
Really? Well, the lady said two planes had hit it.
Well, like each tower, you know?
Right.
There was one plane in each tower.
No, I'm with you. That's what happened. I'm just saying, she said that. She described to you what happened.
Well, yeah, basically. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I'm saying this was in my dream, you know?
Like, yeah.
Anyway, so I woke up, and then, like, my mom told me what happened a couple hours later, you know, and I woke up, and I just freaked out. And I couldn't believe it was real, because, like, I had just dreamed it. Mm-hmm. And
have you ever had anything like this happen to you before?
Never. Not once. And now, like, I have, like, this desire, like, I want really, really badly to go out and, like, help in the rescue effort, and just, I want to be there, like, digging, you know, looking for people and stuff. And I kind of have, like, I have a small, like, history of depression, and I'm wondering if, you know, I don't know what the hell the dream is about.
Is it possible, just playing devil's advocate, that somebody, you heard your mom say something downstairs at 6 o'clock when it actually did happen, you know, on the West Coast now, and you woke up and misconstrued the time. Like maybe your mom went downstairs and just went, oh my God, two planes just hit the World Trade Center, and you were asleep, and you looked at, you dreamt that you looked at the clock and saw 5 o'clock when in fact it was 6 o'clock and you woke up an hour later. Because it happened at 6 o'clock our time.
Well, yeah, happened at like 5:45.
Yeah, 5:45. But you see what I'm saying? Or maybe it was, he was listening to somebody at a neighbor yell it or something.
Well, no, I mean somebody could have had the TV on
or something
downstairs,
yeah.
And you hear it faintly through the door, kind of thing.
Right,
and that's possible. And you never know. Drew and I were having this conversation last night on the ride home
because you dreamt something.
I dreamt that I was watching a plane crash that night.
What time did that happen?
It's hard to tell with me, you know.
I
sleep late and I move around a lot. But listen,
you sleep in a vault, so I know no one was getting through to you in there. I mean, you were in that sealed chamber you sleep in.
Yeah.
So
thank you.
There was no chance. In fact, that's a great control study.
Where
there's no chance any information got in.
It's called the Spankatorium.
Spankaromatorium.
I was bolted into my vault. I think it happened. I think I had the dream after it happened,
yeah.
Which is no different. I mean, in my mind. I mean, look, yeah. I'm not into all this stuff. Yeah. I'm just saying, there's an interesting thing that you and I were talking about last night on our cell phones on the ride home, which was, who knows what the energy of an event this large,
what shock waves it has.
Yeah. And please, I know some people are rolling their eyes, and I'm really the last guy who's into this stuff. On the other hand, there's things that happen that I can't explain, and there are things that cannot be seen that yet happen.
I heard a wild story today. I have I don't think I'm divulging any confidence here. Somebody I work with, son, has some thought disturbances, and he, in January, believed he masterminded two planes one into each tower. And he went around and told the neighbors about it, and they shit his mother to get him back from calling the police to report what he had done.
Wow.
Sent one plane into each tower.
Wow.
And really believed that it happened. And then when it happened, believed that he had done it and that somebody was going to come get him for it.
Oh, so when this happened yesterday, he thought he was the guy behind it.
He did it, yeah.
Drew was saying to me that last night, actually, where are all the psychics?
Yeah. Well, how'd they miss this one?
They're so busy predicting Barbara Streisand's breakup with James Brolin, they missed the good stuff.
Yeah, where was this one?
I don't know. I don't know. I know they said there'd be an earthquake that would measure at least 3 on the Richter scale sometime in the next 20 years here along the San Andreas Fault in Southern California. But as a psychic, how does this one slide under the radar? You know, I mean,
you should lose your psychic license for this one, right? It's a major gap.
All psychics who did not predict, who do not have a notarized copy of this that was dated before 9/11 2001 should be stripped of their psychic ranking and sent back to the mall from whence they came. Because you really think about it. I mean, there's no bigger event
in our lifetime.
There's no bigger event in our lifetime, and there'll probably and hopefully, unless it's a good one, be no bigger event in our lifetime. And as a psychic, how do you miss this one? That's all I'm asking. Any psychics out there? And I didn't hear anything from any of them. I'm just curious. All right, we'll take a break. We'll be back.
Loveline, we'll be right back. Call on the 1-800-LOVE-191.
Hey, y'all. Loveline. I'm Adam. That's Dr. Drew over there. Phone number 1-800-LOVE-191. We thought we'd dedicate another night to the victims and the memories and the tragedy that happened yesterday morning about 8:45. It's something that I'm thinking about and Drew's thinking about and everyone around here is thinking about. We imagine you're thinking about it, too. And so it'd be difficult to talk about anything else right now. And we figured, well, if you're thinking it and we're thinking it, let's just give it another night, see where it goes. Let's talk to...
Ara?
Yes.
What's up?
24. What's going on?
That was great. You got that on the first guess there. Most people call me Era first.
Mm-hmm. I was close to it, but I didn't want to sound like one of the Kennedys.
Mm-hmm. Well, I first of all, I just wanted to tell you guys I love your show. I used to listen to it all the time. I just moved across the country, and you're on at midnight where I'm at, and so it's a little hard to listen to you guys.
Well, that's all right.
But I had some information also about, I don't know if you guys heard about the price gouging, the gas.
I did hear about that. Some independent stations, just stations were jacking their prices up like $3 or $4.
Yeah, this area, and it's nice to hear that things have kind of turned back to normal. As a matter of fact, my mom told me today that one of the gas station owners in the Oklahoma City area got a press conference together. One of the places that was charging $5 a gallon got a press conference together and apologized to everyone.
Well, that's
for
nice.
For doing that and offered refunds to anyone who bought gas at the station.
You know, well, we all have our own way of grieving. For some people, it's gouging. you know, I'll tell you the reason I don't. And thanks for bringing that up, by the way, Ara. Yeah. There's been some reports of things that are basically what I would classify as sort of twisting the knife.
Mm-hmm.
We're in a real bad place right now as a nation, and there's a lot of mourning and grieving and pain going on. And then you hear these stories about people celebrating in Palestine and price gouging in the Midwest for gas. And some guy wanted $400 for a sheet of plywood or some nonsense like this. And I think people pick those stories up and run with them sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
I think the overwhelming reaction of this country has been beautiful.
And our allies.
And our allies.
And I was so touched today. One of the most moving things I saw today was Russians.
Yeah.
Did you see what they did?
They sent over a bottle of Kamchatka vodka.
And we toasted.
And what did they do?
They just showed Russian citizens grieving and setting flowers and really very heartfelt connection. I think if nothing else happens from all this, it could heal that monumental rift we've had with them for 50 years.
How bizarre is that?
Is that bizarre? And Putin, is that his name? Putin?
Right. I don't know.
The Russian.
Yeah, nobody knows, so it doesn't matter.
He was eloquent. I mean, he really was. It was touching. And the Germans. Did you listen to the Germans?
Yeah.
I mean, it was really quite extraordinary.
I'm picturing, I don't know why I just jumped to my head, I'm picturing Nancy Reagan trying to explain to Ronnie what's going on.
Oh.
I don't know why. It just struck me. But here's a guy who did everything he could to put an end to the Cold War and did a nice job with it, by the way. I'm not a big fan of the guy, but, you know. Here's something we shouldn't do, and I don't want to go political on everybody, but just because a guy's a Democrat and you're a Republican, or just because a guy's a Republican and you're a Democrat, you can't throw out everything they do. Jimmy Carter did a couple good things, and you may not like him, and Reagan did a few good things, and you may not like him. One of the things he did was put an end to this Cold War, basically, or make a big dent in it. And I think it would be bizarre for him, and I know he couldn't understand it now, but to tell him that the leaders of Russia were sending their condolences and flowers and thoughts and prayers.
Whatever we need. They're thinking they're going to use Russian bases in Afghanistan.
Well, I'll tell you what I'd like. First off, the Russians got their ass kicked by the Afghanistan people.
Yeah.
It was basically, that's their Vietnam.
Yeah.
So I don't know how much help they're going to be. But furthermore, I'll tell you what they could do. The most helpful thing the Russians could do is find the 12 suitcase nuclear bombs they're missing.
That's right, they're missing.
Yeah, they're missing quite a few of these attaché size nuclear devices.
Seriously?
Oh, yes. Well, because when the country broke up, some of those showed up missing. I mean, because they were spread out in these different provinces who went their own way, basically. I think there's like 12 of them missing. So the point is if they could just go ahead and find those, we consider us even. Do you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to, because they're scared that some of those fell into the hands of, well, who knows. All right. Did I just sufficiently freak everyone out?
I wasn't feeling bad before.
Here was my initial point. The best part of this tragedy for me is seeing the American people rally.
Yeah.
And seeing the love and the compassion and the caring and the genuine sincerity and the beautiful hearts that 99% of this society has. And I don't want to taint that by one guy in Tulsa who's charging $5 a gallon.
Right.
I hate that. And if this is something that's taken place on a wide scale, fine, bring it up. But if it's one guy, one gas station, or 10 guys in 10 gas stations, when the other 30,000 gas stations are handing out American flags and having a blood drive, I don't want to hear it. Mm. Because I don't want to taint the one... I don't want to taint the one good thing that's coming from this, which is Americans really stepping up and rallying.
Mm-hmm.
Kenny?
Yeah. Hey,
you're
guys.
14. What's up?
Hey, you guys are awesome. I tried to call yesterday. I thought what you were doing was cool, but it's busy all night.
Well, that's why we got you tonight.
Yep. Yeah, I called early tonight. But I just woke up yesterday, and one of my my mom's friends called me. I was getting ready for school. She was like, oh, there's been bombs. Two planes have gone into the World Trade Center and one into the Pentagon. And I put my mom on, and she just couldn't believe it. We turned on TV, and I actually, my carpool came, and I had to go to school. We were listening to it unfold on the radio. And at school, when we got there, they told us that they were going to close the school down, and they were going to call the parents and let us go home for the rest of the day. And I didn't have school today either, so...
Oh, you son of a bitch.
Yeah.
You live in L.A., right?
Yeah, we were right in the center of L.A.
Yeah, I've been going to school here for 12 years. I never missed one goddamn day for anything.
This day and when the big earthquake hit were the only days I've ever gotten.
Never made a thing. Once in a while, there'd be a second stage smog alert. We'd have to sit inside during P.E. Yeah. But that's hardly... It's hardly a vacation.
Yeah.
All right. So how are you doing with all this?
I was soaking it in today. I must have seen that plane go into the building at least 100 times.
Mm-hmm.
Still can't believe it every time I see it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's in a way, it's so spectacular that it's just hard to get around the destruction of human life. Yeah, I mean, it's hard to factor it in.
Yeah, your brain just moves past it. It doesn't let you really see that fully. Your brain goes into sort of a denial mode. Ooh, it's like a dream, is how you start thinking.
I think for me, it's that my brain focuses on
the
sort
explosion.
Of spectacular nature of it, and it becomes like a fireworks show for me. It's like I cannot human beings into it.
Right, that's right. How can you just try to imagine how many floors of people just where the plane went in? And what happened there? How many floors? How many thousands? I mean,
I don't know. I mean, it's like I know that every one of those floors is poured concrete. It's poured on a corrugated pan, basically. It's how they build the steel superstructure up from the outside. Then they put a corrugated pan, like a corrugated roof, and they pour concrete. And each floor should be pumped, poured concrete that's, a good 6, 8, 10 inches thick, at least. So if that plane went in 2-3 floors above you, you shouldn't, it's the fire. It's not so much the weight or the debris. I mean, there shouldn't be that much downforce on you. There's going to be a lot of jet fuel spilling down.
That's on fire.
Toward your floor, I would assume.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I don't know if the people, and I don't know if we'll ever know. I imagine we'll start to figure things out. But I would imagine it just initially, first thought is the people 2-3 floors below may have been all right initially.
Hmm.
Do you know what I'm saying?
I don't know, but I know what you're saying.
I mean,
that makes sense.
There was slabs of concrete every floor, and there was no down
force.
Force
wasn't going down.
Yeah, it was kind of blowing out into a fireball, and who the hell knows? And there goes my keys. But the point is even watching it on film, it didn't look like much happened below. Windows weren't blowing out or whatever. Just didn't look like so much underneath.
I read a lot of email stories today. I read a story of a guy who got out, and he was an engineer on the 20th floor, and he knew the building was supposed to move 14 inches, and he felt the impact, and then he felt it move 20 feet, he said. And that's when he knew the building wouldn't stand. It just buckled out 20 feet, he said.
It just lurched?
It lurched 20 feet, yeah. Oh,
right. I heard those. I didn't see it in the film.
Yeah,
I couldn't see it. Couldn't see it.
But 20 feet is so small on a thing that giant scale. You can't see that.
Yeah, I guess not. All right. Let's talk to Bill, who's 18. Bill?
Yeah?
What's up?
Not much. There was a couple issues I had with this whole thing. And, one thing I found out today, I was planning on giving blood, you know, for the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I found there was some kind of criteria that you have to be able to give blood. They said you had to be at least 17, 110 pounds, no STDs, and that's all fine by me. But then they said you have to have no tattoos or piercings from last year.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah,
it is.
I didn't know that.
No blue hair either, so
yeah.
Engineer Anderson found
Anderson
out the
said
hard
no
way.
Blue hair. I went to give today. I went in to try to give. I went just as the thing was opening up, and they went, thank you very much, but you can make an appointment for next week sometime. We are booked.
Yeah, people are, I found that out today, too, not by going in, but by calling, that people have gone in at such large numbers.
Yeah.
Well, and I mean, look at it this way, too. I mean, if you really want to just do the math, 275 million people in this country, how many injured people have they pulled out of the wreckage? 450?
Yeah.
1,000?
Yeah.
So far?
Yeah.
How much blood was spilled as opposed to how much is coming in?
Right.
You know what I mean? I mean,
right.
if 1% of this country went in and gave blood yesterday and today, that's 2 million gallons more than they needed.
And everybody wants to do something. You know, you want to do what you can do.
Right.
Absolutely. There are some funds being formed down here in Los Angeles for the firemen, the fallen firemen. We're going to try to get those numbers.
Oh, really?
Yeah, for their families and things.
Yeah, because, you know, you think about it, the dust will clear and the smoke will clear. And they'll clean it up, and they'll put a plaque up, and they'll clean up, and 8 months will go by, and a year will go by, and 2 years will go by, and we'll have forgotten about this. I mean, we'll remember it, but it's not going to be affecting us on a daily basis. But these firemen, these cops that had a couple of kids, 2, 3, 4 years old, this is a situation where these people are going to have to deal with this, not only emotionally, but just financially.
Absolutely.
Practically.
Yeah.
You know, you got a mom who has 2 or 3 kids who's taking care of those 2 or 3 kids. All of a sudden, there's no income coming in.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the kind of thing that goes on for years and years and years. Okay. We're going to take ourselves a break. We're talking about the tragedy yesterday and the aftermath and new things that were learned and new stories and your thoughts and your feelings. We'll get more into that after this.
Hello? Is this Loveline?
Call 1-800-LOVE-191. Adam and Dr. Drew will be right back.
Yep, it is Loveline. I'm Adam Carolla. That is Dr. Drew over there. Phone number 1-800-LOVE-191. We're talking about the tragedy of the... tragedy's enough. I don't have to get into it. You guys know the one I'm talking about, right?
Oh, yeah.
You know what I was thinking about today? How stoked is Paula Poundstone? How stoked is that bitch?
Even Bill Clinton's happy. A lot of heat off these people.
Clinton's happy. Paula Poundstone. Well, what's Clinton been up to?
Who knows?
That's a good point. I was just thinking, there's like, you know, they did like... they did like 24-hour straight coverage on this, and then real fast, the guy went, and
hey.
Paula Poundstone put in a plea bargain. Anyway, we're going to Beirut live now, and I thought to myself, she's feeling so good about
it. Listen, my wife.
Wait a minute.
There's somebody.
How pumped is Gary Condit?
That's the one.
How pumped is Condit about this whole thing?
That's the one that completely vanished.
He's the one who bombed everything.
Oh, you think he did it?
He's the guy that hijacked the plane.
That's a very valid, valid point.
Interesting theory.
makes more sense than a lot of ones I've heard. Yeah. It was now you. Oh, he wasn't piloting the plane, Gary.
No, it was just his people.
You know, it's going to be great, though. It's going to be great. I'm sure he's going to be on the floor yelling for justice.
Yeah. Yep. My wife pointed that one out. She goes, "My God, it was 24/7 Condit. Now zero."
Yeah, So Paula Poundstone. Well, look. Here's the way I figure it. Robert Blake can thank Gary Condit for stepping in. And Condit and Paula Poundstone can both thank the Nation of Islam for helping them out. All right, let's talk to Chris, who's 29. Chris?
Good evening.
What's up?
Oh, I just want to say thanks for hosting the special forum tonight. I woke up on Tuesday morning to see this on the television. The first thing I thought when the towers collapsed was, how is it possible that 2,000-foot-plus structures fall straight down to the ground?
Yeah.
I hadn't seen anything in the media that had covered it. And on Minnesota Public Radio tonight, there's a gentleman named Tom Loudon.
I'm going to stop you, Chris. We wondered that, too. Why didn't they topple over or something? You know, why didn't they go to the side? Right? Then we asked that, Adam, last night, you and I?
Yeah. I could give you some theories after Chris gets done with his. The first thing I thought was, you know, these people who have been demolishing buildings and stadiums for all these years, telling you what a science it was.
Yeah.
I think a lot of them may be out of work. Like, listen, we'll load up an old DC-9 with some kerosene and take care of it ourselves.
So what happened, Chris, when you heard about it?
Well, the gentleman's name is Tom Loudon, I believe. He's one of only two or three companies in the world that do this. They've done over 7,000 demolitions.
Right.
And he said when the structure was designed back in the 60s, it was designed to take the hit of a 707, 727.
The
and
60s.
It took the hit fine, but like Adam said earlier, the fire did cause the top to fall. But when the building was designed, the architect, the steel bracing that was on the very outside of the building bore a lot of the weight of the building.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of the structure, so that as it collapsed level by level, it pretty much naturally imploded, just like it would if a company had rigged it. And it's hard to find good in this.
I'm not following.
Okay.
Well, hold on. What aren't you following?
What the logic is that the external steel structure had anything to do with why it didn't topple?
Steel structure on the outside. I know everyone has seen all the pictures, and there's one in particular that shows the steel structures in the dark. And it bore a lot of the weight of the building, so that as the top top crumbled and brought the weight down in the center, the structure of the building, the skeletal outside structure, was enough to contain that downward force.
I see.
So that as it fell level by level, these steel structures would collapse in upon itself.
Yeah, I think what happened, and I think this is basically how this goes, and I think, Chris, you were going to go on to say that what if 80, 90 stories had fallen over like an oak tree?
Right.
We'd be counting the bodies in the hundreds of thousands.
I mean, literally, because a building that is, 80, 90 stories, I mean, that's thousands of feet in the air.
Yeah.
I mean, it's 100 feet. Approximately every 10 stories.
Yeah.
So what the hell does that work out to be? The point is that thing, if it fell over like a tree was falling, it would have taken out quite a bit.
Yeah.
Quite a bit in its path, and who knows who.
Right.
Absolutely. And I think what happened was, and it's amazing that it didn't go that way, but the trauma was at the top of the building.
Right.
And when it wasn't knocked over by the force of the airplane hitting it, when it withstood that, then the amazing heat generated by that jet fuel melted
the metal
girders, and those things melt. I mean, the deal is Drew and I were talking about this. Drew, we covered quite a bit of ground on our way home. I was explaining to Drew that in these high-rise fires, these girders, these steel girders, the substructure that the thing is, the superstructure that the building is made of, it has a fairly low melting point. Hmm. And this stuff melts and it buckles. And that's what happens. And that's why sometimes when you go into an underground parking lot and you see some of those, or, you know, if you go into and you see a building that's being built new, like you're walking down a sidewalk in Vegas and you see the steel, you'll see that white cottage cheese-like substance that seems to be sprayed all over it. That's fire retardant so that those don't melt and buckle. But once the heat melted and buckled those things, it actually just sort of came down on itself. And I think once you got the inertia heading straight down, it just kept going.
Yeah.
And I think if you'd gotten the inertia going to the side, it would have kept going that way. But
right.
once it withstood the airplane ramming into it, and once it started heading down as the girders were melting, yeah. starting at the impact area and then moving down, it just became like, I'm trying to think of what the example is, that boom, 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 straight down. No, not dominoes. There's something that moves up and down, and I'm trying to think what that is. Or maybe I'm making it up because Drew's looking at me
like
in a very strange
like a
way.
Cartoon-esque type.
Right.
You know,
it's like in a cartoon when they drop the anvil through the top floor and
right.
it just goes through every floor.
Exactly.
All the inertia was going down, not sideways. And once it got going down, it just kept going straight down. And I guess one of the few things you can look at and say, it could have been worse. Mm. It really could have been. Mm. Okay, we'll take a break. It's Loveline. I'm Adam. That's Drew over there. Phone number 1-800-LOVE-191. We're dedicating another night to the tragic events that occurred yesterday.
And your feelings about it. We haven't heard a lot of feelings tonight, a lot of opinions, but that's how we're feeling about this. It's time to talk about it.
Yappa.
Hey.
Hey.
What's going on?
Well, we should call you Yappa.
Yeah, it's Yappa.
What's up there, Yappa? You're 29.
I'm 29. In case you wonder about my name, I'm from Denmark. I came to the United States when I was 6, so
All right.
Please don't make fun, Adam.
We got no problem with your kind today.
Hey, I heard the comment that the gentleman made earlier about not being able to donate blood. I work for the American Red Cross Blood Services, and the reason for the piercings and the tattoos, and
right.
Drew, I'm sure can back me up on this, is that the hepatitis threat, if you're using dirty needles or things like that, the hepatitis virus can live for a long time even in dried blood. So that's what that was about. It's not an appearance thing at all.
Why the blue hair? Oh, no, we know it's not the appearance thing. No. I thought it was obvious that it was a needle issue.
We should have discussed it more, but Drew and I both assumed.
What about the blue hair, though? That's one that confused me.
That, I asked the screener, and she said Anderson had donated at a different facility. It was not a Red Cross one. I don't have any answer for that. I know that Red Cross does not have any policy or of any type for something like that.
About hair dye.
I have an inside source that says Anderson chugged two bottles of orange juice and ate five of those large-size Mrs. Fields cookies last time he went in there.
That's probably why they pissed him. He pissed them off.
Right, that's why
point.
They sent him packet.
No, even hair dye. I have a friend that works in collections, actually, and she does the screening, and she said there's nothing she can think of with hair dye.
That's fine.
No, there's nothing you can think of with hair dye.
Except
just think
the hepatitis risk may be a little higher in somebody with blue hair.
The chance of the Prince Albert goes up dramatically with the blue hair.
Yeah, but do they check for piercings? And is it piercing?
They don't. They ask questions. They ask, have you had any piercings?
And is it the piercing within
a year?
Yeah, it's within a year, right.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
And, you know, and I think, too, and thanks for clearing that up, but we do appreciate it. I think too, when it comes to screening people that are donating blood, they don't think that people are as apt to lie about things because it's a voluntary,
right,
humanitarian, philanthropic-type endeavor. I mean, what's in it for you?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I mean, is it the worst day of your life if some guy says, sorry, we can't stick a needle in your arm and drain a pint of blood from you today for free?
Right.
Go home. You know, most people go, all right, I'm going. And let's talk to Nick.
Except you get pissed off if they won't take it because it's a day too early.
Well, they called. You understand they called me and told me to come out.
I understand.
All right, go ahead, Nick.
Oh, what's up?
Hey, Nick.
Yeah, I can't believe I'm talking to you guys.
Well, we can't believe we're talking to you, Nick.
Oh, thanks. You know, this is like, it's kind of sad, you know, just to see all the people dying, and when you hear about the families talking to their family members on the phone when the plane crashed, and then the phone goes dead, you know. Oh, sorry. You know, you actually kind of, it's just sad.
Yeah.
And I know most people in my age group don't talk about this, like, but this is kind of the talk of the school. All the teachers are explaining to us. All my friends are talking about, you know, what they were doing and what they felt about it. And it's just sad. And I can't believe, you know, I keep watching that video of the plane going in, and it just looks like a movie. It doesn't look even real, you know?
And, you know, here's another thing. And thanks, Nick. We appreciate you sharing your feelings. This is, you know, a time now from a technological standpoint, and everyone's got satellite and cable TV. In the past, when these tragedies happen, if we saw some grainy black and white image of
the Hindenburg
Hindenburg catching on fire, or some terrorists in the 73 or 72 Olympics jumping into some building or something, it was so grainy, it was so far away.
Yeah.
It looked like footage taken from a B-17 in World War II.
Right.
It was sterilized by the technology.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wonder what kind of overall hardening effect it will have on the young people of this society watching this sort of mass murder destruction and seeing it repeatedly.
Yeah.
You know, that's the kind of thing that is, you know, burned into you. And I just hope, I mean, only time will tell, but I hope it does not leave permanent scars. Bobak?
Hi.
Hey, you're 22. What's up?
Hi, yeah. Well, you know, I'm here in L.A., and it's sort of funny, because I happen to be Persian, but, you know, as Persian as, you know, anybody, you know. Yeah, Persian being Middle Eastern.
Anybody who lives in L.A.
Yeah, exactly. Right. You know, it's sort of like, it's a pretty generic, you know, ethnicity down here. Just like, you know, anyone who's Latino and anyone, you know, who's African-American or anything.
Well, that's why I made the comment last night for all the people, including Drew and myself and producer Ann and Anderson and everyone who works here at Loveline, worrying about attacks on L.A. I don't think the rest of the country looks at, I don't think the rest of the world looks at L.A. as part of the United States. So we have nothing to worry about.
Yeah, I know, exactly. I mean, where are they going to hit? The Hollywood sign? There's nothing.
Well, not only that, we're them. The multicultural, multi-ethnic nature of this city, we're them.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Yeah, I mean, look, they blow up something in Glendale, they're going to get nothing but Armenians. They're not going to get the white infidel.
Well, you see, there's the thing, though, because, I mean, you know, I'm Persian, which has absolutely nothing to do with what's going on, because, you know, it's going between, unfortunately, the poor people who are
Hold on, don't play that system of a down. How dare you? Go ahead.
No, but anyways, you know what I mean? But, you know, I'm not going to lie, because now, you know, I realized when, as soon as this happened, I'm like, you know, I look like Che Guevara. Most people don't even realize the Middle Eastern, even my own race. So, at the same time, I'm like, I mean, I guess I sort of felt a little bit of guilty pleasure knowing that I wouldn't be singled out. But then I'm watching, you know, on television, and it's terrible. And, you know, I guess it's the media's, you know, prerogative to show the cheering going on in Palestine, you know.
Yeah.
And what really crushed me is I moderate a website, and I watched all these people start coming in, you know, from all over the country. And, you know, I was expecting them to feel like I was, you know, angry that people had done this and wanting to, you know, take out the terrorists who were responsible. But then I started, you know, hearing, you know, oh, the Israelis are cheering, and I'm like, how ignorant is that, you know? These aren't, I mean, first of all, obviously the Israelis are sort of the wrong label, considering, you know, those are our Jewish allies.
Hold on, the Israelis are cheering?
Well, no, that's exactly, but people were sort of misconceiving what, because they see, you know, in Israel, and, you know.
I see, yeah.
You know, and, you know, I'm actually of Muslim descent, that's horrible.
Well, listen, here's the problem with people in this part of the world, and, you know, it wasn't a problem until recently, but we have a difficult time discerning the difference between, you know, Palestinians and Israelis and Indians, oftentimes, I mean, Eastern Indians. And we cannot figure out who is who by looking at them. And the names are all sort of, you know, we're at war 1 minute with one of them, and then they're an ally, and then we're at war with them again. And I think if you stopped your average United States residents and, you know, asked them what the difference was between all these different cultures are, I don't think most people could give you a clear answer.
Yeah, I agree with you wholeheartedly, Adam. You know,
or even name the capital of the countries.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so it's time for you to get an Afro wig and start passing yourself off as black.
Well, here's the funny thing, Adam. You know, I was born in Toronto, raised and served 15 years in Bakersfield before I came down to L.A. Ooh. For college.
So, oh, boy.
I'm pretty, you know, I've got the long hair, the goatee. Most people think I either look like Che Guevara or Jesus. So.
Right. Mm. Well, you know, Bakersfield is really the Beirut of the West.
Oh, yes.
As you'll see it on the sign as you drive in.
Yeah.
Welcome
to Little Beirut.
What sort of amazed me, though, is, you know, here I am, you know, because I thought I was safe because of the way I looked, which is sort of a cop-out, but, you know, it was pretty much the truth.
Well, has anybody hassled you?
Well, that's what surprised me. You know, I was tonight, you know, because, you know, I'm a college graduate, you know, working out with some colleagues and friends, at a, you know, local gym, and then all of a sudden one of them just comes up to me, and, you know, I'm a very liberal guy, you know, just sort of, you know, we always would talk, joke about, you know, racial oppression about other people, and all of a sudden one of them comes up to me, and it's sort of like, so Bobek, where can I get a checkered handkerchief for my head? And I was just looking at him, and I'm like, first of all, wrong ethnicity, second of all, you know, whoa, you know, I've never been outside of the United States. Well, I've been to Europe, but, you know, that's like...
Right, but, you know, you got to understand...
Just one of your jack-off friends. I can imagine Adam's friends if some Italian did something. Please.
I know, again, and I spoke about this earlier, I hate to see the beautiful, heartfelt outpouring of emotion and donated blood and time. And the one good thing that's come of this whole thing is really seeing people rally around strangers, people coming together who've never met, don't have anything to gain from it, that are just pouring their hearts out and their time and their money for this, for the cause. And it really saddens me when they focus on the side of, you know, some Palestinian cab driver was yanked out and beaten, you know, up in New York or something like that. And, you know, you realize this is going to happen. But I think it's been held to a minimum.
I hope so.
I really do. I have not heard too many cases of it. Have you?
We have matured as a nation, I think, to that extent.
Right.
That it's not about color or culture. It's about, you know, a certain segment of the world that is hell-bent on disaster.
Right. Right. And who need to be dealt with. Corey?
Yeah, hey.
You're 16. What's up?
I was talking... I heard you guys talking earlier about how people were, like, on the fifth floor and not being able to survive that kind of drop.
Yeah.
Well, I heard about some guy who called from his cell phone, how he's trapped, and it was on the 80th floor when it collapsed. Like...
When it collapsed or when collapsed. Where he started from?
When it collapsed.
And he
trapped underneath. He was, like, survived and calling from his cell phone.
Well, you know, listen, if you take 20,000 people, put them in a confined space, and have all hell break loose, there's going to be five stories of people that were, I don't mean five stories tall, I mean five tales of guys of miraculous survival.
But his point is that
you're not going to hear much of it.
How did he fall 80 stories and survive?
Well, I don't know, and you don't know, and he may not even know, but the point is if you have hundreds and thousands of people and you put them in a small area and have something catastrophic happen, there's going to be a few survivors.
Yeah.
And I guarantee anyone who survives is going to have a miraculous tale of survival.
And what's that, Corey?
What's that?
They haven't found him yet.
They haven't found him yet?
No. He's still buried down there.
But they've been talking to him.
You know the thing, I think about our cell phone conversations and how the phone cuts out 3, 4, 5 times on the 20-minute ride home through this beautiful city known as Los Angeles. Yeah. And I think to myself, that would be a fitting end for me to be trapped under some rubble, not far from help, but not getting proper cell phone.
No reception.
Reception.
Yeah.
I could, you know, really, I'm surprised to hear about all these cell phones working through all of this.
That crossed my mind many times.
I can't drive through the goddamn 405 pass with the thing working. I can't imagine dropping 80 stories and being trapped under several tons of rubble and having the thing work. I mean, literally, Drew and I drive home, I can see his headlights in my rear view and I can't talk to him. Mark?
Yes.
What's up?
Dr. Drew was talking about that no one's really calling about their talking about their feelings, but I have some, as I'm sure a lot of people do, have incredibly strong feelings about this, and going constantly back and forth from complete and total sadness to absolute
rage. Yeah.
And one minute watching the news and hearing the stories about people calling on their cell phones from the plane and being incredibly sad, and then hearing about protests in Seattle, people saying give peace a chance, and which is absolutely and just enrages me, because I mean, I'm not a violent person, I'm not the first person to say let's just bomb the hell out of everyone over there, but in a case like this, I mean, there's no other option.
Well, if there were some example in history where humans that behave like this responded to something different than overwhelming force, please show me.
Right.
Please. Because, right. You know, we do in psychiatric hospitals, when people start behaving wacky, when they get very violent and aggressive and delusional,
you get a show of force together, because that's the only thing that works. Whether you're in a psychiatric hospital dealing with an aggressive delusional person or on an airplane dealing with one, the only thing, I mean the only thing, is an overwhelming show of force. So that's what you have to do. If anything else worked, by all means, bring it on.
Well, and throughout history, as Drew said, from, you know, Hitler to Mussolini to Idi Amin to Stalin, the list, Genghis Khan, the list just keeps going on and on and on. You hold hands, pull out some flowers, and try to pass the peace pipe around, and these people just stomp you. I mean, look, I agree with these people who don't want, here's their thing. It's like, we don't want to see any more people die. I agree. Yeah. That's why we got to stomp this group out.
Yeah. Exactly.
We don't want to see any more people die. And if they're going to die, it's going to be them. I mean, it's going to be the people that brought it on.
Exactly. And that's why I'm not just for quick retaliation. I am completely in agreement. You try and find out exactly who is responsible, and you go after them at that point. And as far as, like I said, too, and I'm not a violent person or anything like that, but, I mean, I'm 33 years old, and I have a couple of bad knees, but I would beg the president to go over and fight right now if I could.
Mm. Yeah. I think it'd be great, too. Not actually... You know, I'd like to be on the aircraft carrier.
Or just to be able to just ask the president if you could.
Yeah.
Yeah, just please.
So
can
I could make
fight?
The newspaper. Yeah. Corolla asked Bush if he can go over there fight. Bush says, no, we need you stateside on the radio.
But isn't it interesting?
Working propaganda campaign.
Can you get a feel, though, for what happened, like, in 1930, whatever that, 38? You know, why people all of a sudden rallied the way they did?
41.
41. Because 6 months ago, I would have gone, gee, how did they, what happened? What was that all about? How did they... Now, all of a sudden, you kind of get it.
No, we were discussing last night that I think younger people in this nation have gotten a bad shake. Yep. Where people said, look, everyone's out for themselves. They're too busy playing with Nintendo and doing amyl nitrate and ecstasy and going to raves to pull it together. You know, the last great generation was a generation that fought World War II. And if something happened, God forbid, in this day and age, I don't think we could cut it.
Yeah.
Well... We could cut it.
Yeah.
And I think that's clear.
Yeah.
And I think when push comes to shove, people are going to put down the X, the Nintendo control joystick. And get busy kicking some foreign ass. And I think we're going to see that. Also, it's a different kind of war now, which is we don't need the numbers that we needed before. I mean, in the past... World War II, we needed numbers. Yeah. We needed a lot of men to sign up to get onto troop transports and head overseas. We don't need that anymore. We just need support, and we need tax dollars, and we need superior technology, and we'll let the experts go over there and do some surgery on our foes. And that doesn't mean there's not going to be some bloodshed on our side, but we do not need farmers to drop their pitchforks and head into recruiting offices around the country. It's not necessary anymore, and thank God. Jason?
Yeah.
You're 26.
Yeah, hey, the guy just called, and he was talking about the guy was actually, or I'm sorry, I'm all tongue-tied. The guy on the 89th floor that fell, he was actually inside the building when it collapsed.
Mm-hmm.
On the 89th floor, and they've already dug him out, and they interviewed him in the hospital.
Wow.
So, but yeah, I don't understand how he made it through that. I mean, like you said, that there's going to be a few cases where people make it, but...
It must have gone down in slow motion in some spot where nothing on top of him. Maybe it slid off to one direction, and then his segment just sort of slowly collapsed or something.
As I said, yeah. I don't think we could dream up a scenario in which anyone would live, but if you have 20,000 people, 10 of them are going to live.
Yeah.
It's still not great odds. I mean, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, and around here it just seems like no one's really, I don't know, you get the callers and stuff on the radio that are enraged, but there's a real, I guess, maybe it's still disbelief. It happened 3,000 miles away from us, and I don't think people really... are fathoming that we're going to war yet, but I think people should realize that it'll be a lot different. I mean, you think that on a day when nothing was going on, these people hijacked all these planes and flew them into our buildings and killed almost as many people possibly as it were killed in the whole entire Vietnam War, if we start bombing their country, there will be more retaliations here on American soil, and I don't think that's really setting in with people.
You know, it is something that I thought about initially, which is they throw punch, we counter punch back, and these are the kind of people that are going to want to throw another punch. On the other hand, the majority of these people in this part of the world and the ones that live in this country, the overwhelming majority of these people are not terrorists, as we talked about last night. They're good people. They're like everyone else. They're trying to work. They're worried about their family. They're worried about their health, and they're worried about paying their mortgage. There's a small fringe fanatical group that unfortunately is real bad PR for the rest of that world. You think we act as if we don't kill every one of them, they're going to send a new one over every week. I don't think that's true. You get rid of a few of the main dudes over there, like Bin Laden. This is a guy who's a multimillionaire, who's made it his life's work to rain terror on the United States and any of our allies, especially Israel. And you get rid of a guy, you cut the head off of a guy like that, and the body's going to hit the ground. And there's just not that many people that have that much energy. There's a few of them, but I believe we get rid of some of the right guys. I mean, look at it this way. It's starting to look like it's this Bin Laden guy who masterminded this thing. Well, we've known about this guy for 15 years, and we've been after him for, 10 years, and we haven't gotten to him. What if we had gotten to him 8, 10 years ago, 2 years ago, 5 years ago? Would this have ever even happened? I don't think so. And by the way, this we do this, whether it's Gary Condit or Bin Laden, we lose interest. You know what I mean? Here's a guy everyone was after 3 years ago. Remember, FBI's 10 most wanted list and all the pictures and stuff. And he was gone. And by the way, when a guy like that is out of the scene for a few years, that's the time to start worrying, by the way. If you think about it. When a guy like that's laying low.
Yeah,
what do you think he's doing? Okay. We're going to, and by the way, I don't know, it's something that popped in my head a couple of times when they talked about this guy who fell 89 stories and managed to survive, and how did he do it. It always reminds me of the story of another time this country was at war in World War II, when we were fighting the Germans. They had the Bismarck. It was a battleship that they pretty much thought was unsinkable. It was the biggest one in the German fleet, and it was the biggest one in the ocean. And it was just this battleship that would just take out anything in its path. It had the biggest guns and the longest range and the best armament and the best technology. And it got into a skirmish with a British ship called the Hood. And it fired like one round, and it hit its ammunition center. And the ship just went up. And there was like 1,450 guys on the Hood. And two or three guys survived.
On the Bismarck, you mean?
On the Hood. That the Bismarck took out. Later on, we took out the Bismarck.
I see. Yeah.
The English did. Yeah. But the point is, you talk about it. I don't know how. One minute there's 1,400 and 1,500 guys walking around on a ship, and the next minute there's two guys floating in the water, and those are the only two guys who are alive. So how does this happen? I don't know, but it will, and it does. And hopefully they'll find more of these guys. We'll be back.
Loveline.
Hey, hey. Yeah. All right.
Here we are, another joyous night.
Yeah. Yeah, I was just thinking about... Drew and I just talking about war and having a lot of good discussions during the break. And, many a war has been started over the killing of civilians. I mean, we always think of Pearl Harbor... But World War One.
Well, that was a killing a prince.
They killed the crown prince of Hungary or
Bratislava.
Bratislava, Maka or whatever.
Is another Yugoslavia.
They assassinated a crown prince in one of these little nations, and that started that. And with us, they sunk the Lusitania, I believe. That drew us into this. Hmm. It's the same sort of thing, essentially, which is you have a group of civilians who are sort of going about their business. Hmm. You murder those civilians, and the country says, game on.
Mm-hmm.
And that's essentially, theoretically, most probably, what's happening now. You came over and murdered some civilians, and it is now game on. The difference is we don't know if these 12 or 15, you know, fundamentalist guys represent the views of the entire country.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the problem. We can only sit on so many F-14s for so long with so many Sidewinders and Tomahawk missiles. We can only sit on that
so long. With this kind of tragedy.
Yes. I mean, what I'm saying is, for anybody who's interested in giving this country a go, we are essentially like Mike Tyson, except for we have a good nature. But we're only going to take a punch in the stomach by a 110-pound guy for so long before we just decide to drop that right hand.
Well, the other thing is, if these countries, if it doesn't represent the views of those countries, fine. Hand over the guys that did this then.
Well, that's fine. That's the thing, too. And listen, we've been asking them to hand these guys over for years, and they haven't done it. And now, and here's the other thing I wanted to say, which is, a lot of people are going to say, you know, well, maybe it's not fair what we're going to do, or there's going to be innocent people hurt, or there's going to be this and there's going to be that. But here's the deal. There was many an opportunity to do the right thing for many a year, and they didn't do it. Do they deserve to be killed for it? Probably not. But when you F around with guys that are bigger than you, S happens, and I think S is going to happen. And I wanted to say to the folks, not that we have any listening, but I was thinking, a lot of these guys think when they die, they're just going up to bang the hell out of virgins. I mean, that's what a lot of that religion ascribes. And if that's what you believe, this is going to be real good news for you, because we're going to get you there just a little bit sooner than you thought. You shouldn't have any difficulty with that, by the way. You don't even have to leave your house. John?
Yeah.
You're 26.
That's right.
Drew, how freaked out would you be, one second, how freaked out would you be if hopefully 50 years from now when you die, you ascended to heaven and you saw a whole bunch of Islamic guys banging the bejesus out of virgins? You'd be like, holy Christ, they were right.
Time to convert.
Oh, man.
That'll be my hell. I spend hell in heaven watching Islamic guys bang the bejesus out of virgins.
What's up, John?
But seriously, a bunch of guys with turbans on just banging the hell out of virgins.
All right. Hey, that sounds pretty good. I think I'm converting right
yeah,
now.
Yeah. Not a bad
plan. Like a good deal.
Yeah.
What Adam said about the USA being Mike Tyson and the other countries being 110-pound weaklings, I agree. The only thing is, I'm seeing in the newspaper and I'm hearing a lot of talk and reading on the internet that people seem to think that we're going to go bomb the hell out of some country. I think even though we are the big guy in the world, the United States, I think we're kind of like a bunch of sissies. In Iran and Iraq and Pakistan and Afghanistan, you steal someone's sheep, you get your hand cut off. You rape someone's wife, you get your penis cut off. You do something bad, they kill you. Here, you could go on a murdering spree in a state, I mean, besides Texas. They'll kill you in Texas. And you get to go to jail. You get three meals a day. You get to watch TV. You get to lift weights.
Well, as you get married and have kids from your cell.
But interestingly,
Or someone rapes a woman and like they go to jail. The trial goes on for a year or two. There are more years in jail. We don't really do anything. I think people think we're going to go in and bomb Pakistan or bomb Afghanistan. I think we're not going to do anything. And even if we did do something and get the 15 or 20 guys, is that going to give us satisfaction? We get 20 of their guys, and they get what, 20,000 of ours?
No.
Is that going to bring you satisfaction? We killed 20 people. They've killed more of our firefighters. 200 firefighters are missing.
Well, John, first off, your number of 20 people is sort of fantasy. There will be more than that. But, you know, here's the thing. We will do something, and I'll tell you why. Because Bush is just backed his way into the office, and whoever's around him is telling him, "Look, you want to make another run at this. You know, you got a long time in this office. You're going to have to stand up and do something now." I guarantee he will make a showing. He will have to make a showing.
I'm hearing that from a lot of people. I really don't think...
You know what else interesting? I find interesting is all that our concern about how we treat one another. Those are things we have talked about on this show before, and those sorts of issues suddenly melt away. And I think in this whole uniting that is going on, you know, you could be standing next to somebody that was a criminal who suddenly will be with you. You know what I mean? That people are lining up together.
Yeah, I agree.
And so that clemency that we have is suddenly working in our way, in our favor, because people, like, you know, they know they've been treated clemently and are okay with the system that did that for them.
I think there's I think what we're seeing in this nation is there's a fair amount of this country's populace that does nothing but complain about this country. And when they have an opportunity to look around to see where they're living and who their neighbors are and what their opportunities are.
And what real threats are.
And what real threats are and what real oppression is and what real danger is.
Yeah.
And that
in, shut the F up.
In Israel, this kind of stuff is a daily occurrence, not of this magnitude, but you're scared to go in and get a slice of pizza or go to a marketplace or go sit in a crowded movie theater, that they realize, hey, maybe we should stop bad-mouthing this country. This country has its faults, but show me one that's better. And by the way, as I've said many a time, why are you here? Why are you here? If this country's so screwed up, why are you all here? And why are you all dying to get in? Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Why do we have to constantly criticize something that is so much better than anything else out there? Look around. Throw a dart at the map. See where it lands. You want to go there? You want to go to Africa, northern or southern Africa? You want to go to the Soviet, you know, former Republic of the Soviet Union? Where do you want to go on this map? Beside this country, possibly Canada. Where do you want to go? Which, by the way, is just that's their country because we let them be that.
U.S. light.
Yeah, the second they start trouble, we'll be part of this country. But the point is. This is the greatest country on earth, and I think people are starting to sort of realize, look, let's stop looking around and beating ourselves up. The enemy is not within these borders. It's outside of this country's borders, and we got to go over there and start stomping a little ass. And I'm glad to see people a little bit fired up about that, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that. And I know that may sound crass, but it's time to show people why we're a superpower, why we're the number one military presence on this planet. And we got to stop second-guessing ourselves and pussyfooting around so much and stomp some serious ass. Because that, as Drew stated, is the only thing that these people understand is pure in-your-face terror. That's all they understand.
You got another question, Widow?
Bring it
up. Hurry up.
Get
out of my face right now. Push, you nasty thing.
Make me want to puke.
That's who we need to send over there to start whooping some ass. And it's going to be done. And I'll tell you what. If we take out a few targets that weren't on the menu, and if a couple innocent people get hurt, and if we destroy a few buildings that we didn't want to destroy, so be it. Let it be a nice reminder to all that are watching what we're capable of doing. And if they think we can F up and take out something that ain't on the menu, good. Let them think we're capable of doing a little carpet bombing every once in a while. Julie?
Hi.
You're 22. What's up?
Yeah, I'm just, you know, I'm sitting at home for the past 2 days kind of flipping through all the news channels, and I just really want to do something.
Mm-hmm.
And I...
Go give blood.
I can't donate blood.
Okay. Send money to the Fireman Relief Fund.
What about you send blood to the Fireman Relief Fund?
No, I don't think it's good.
No.
What else can you do? You know.
Well, listen, here's something you can do, Julie, or just in general. And this goes for everybody except for me. I'm, you know, literally a millionaire.
Mm. Whatever.
This event struck, you know, a day ago, and everyone's thinking, what can they do? And I my fear is 3 days from now, everyone will be thinking, where can I get my next beer?
Right.
And there are people that need help in this country 365 days
right,
out of the year.
Right. I was thinking this, too.
And this is what this can do, I mean, if you really want to, and if anyone listening wants to honor the people that died in this tragedy, do something for this country.
Shore up your own community.
Go
serve food at a homeless center.
Right. Go get involved with the mentoring program and get yourself a little sister. Yeah. And help some 5-year-old kid who doesn't have a good shake. Make a difference. Not something that relates specifically to this tragedy, but that relates to the United States and this country and your fellow man.
The people, it pays tribute.
Right.
On behalf of the people that died, not maybe not in vain.
Yeah, said that 10 minutes ago, Drew. Hey, Julie?
Mm-hmm.
So think in those terms.
I agree with you a lot, but I'm just wondering if you have any thoughts about people's sudden reaction to wanting to help. And
I think it's a really healthy, natural, and good impulse, and I'm glad that people...
And don't let it dissipate. Don't
have
squander
that,
it.
Have that impulse. And,
let it move you.
Yeah, like I said, go... you know, you're 22. You sounds like you got some stuff to offer. Go down and mentor one of those young girls.
Yeah,
it make you feel good. I did it. I actually did it with a guy. I wanted him to give me a chick, but it felt good. Feels nice. You could go hang out with some kid you don't know once a week and buy him a burrito and try to tell him the difference between right and wrong. Yeah, good times. All right, let's talk to James, who's 24. James?
Yeah.
What's up?
Not much. What's happening?
Hey.
Come on, James.
How's it going, Adam, Drew?
Good, what's up?
I just think that, you know, I think it was bad what happened with the cab driver and everything like that, you know. But I think in a lot of ways the American public is fed up with a lot of things besides this, you know. That people come over and come to our country and become citizens, but yet they walk up and down the street and don't speak English. And I'm not John Rocker by no means, nor am I racist. I just think that, you know, this is like, I don't know, the straw that broke the camel's back or whatever you want to say.
Yeah, I think we bend over backwards to be tolerant, to not be called racists or xenophobes in this country, to the point where we start ignoring the better good of the country.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
That
has to be balanced out.
Right, yeah. You don't want to toss some guy out based on his religion or the color of his skin. On the other hand, when we stop requiring people to even speak the language of the country and start bending over backwards, you don't speak English, we'll make street signs in your language and we'll have classes in schools that cater to, well, eventually this country will not be this country anymore.
Right.
It will be a whole bunch of small countries made up of the little groups that came over and were catered to.
Yeah, we'll be like Russia.
Right. You know, and listen, all the folks that are coming over here from wherever they're coming over here from, we are saving you from yourself.
Yeah.
Believe me, there's a reason you've come over here.
It's the greatest place to live in the world.
Of course. And look, if your fantasy is to come over here and recreate your country, well, then where are you going to flee from 20 years from now? This is the most retarded strategy I've ever heard in my life, which is our country sucks. Let's come over to your country, but we'll get pissed off if you try to make it like your country. Yeah, we like to make it like our country.
You know, what if we came over here and made it just like what we left? You know, I mean, that would be pretty retarded.
Right.
You know, we...
That is not the plan. Listen, I think... This country suffers, and thanks for calling, James, from a lot of guilt. Because
about a lot of everything.
Because we've done a lot of things in our day. Oh, we were the only country that's dropped an atomic bomb.
Mm.
Two of them on another country. Mm-hmm. We hear that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we dropped it on the country that started a cowardly sneak attack on Pearl Harbor. And we did it to win a war and save a lot of innocent lives. If we did a mainland invasion of Japan. But the point is we beat ourselves up about a lot of stuff in this country, and I think we ought to stop doing that for a minute. And I think people are. I think people have I think we've stopped beating ourselves up, and we're feeling a little angry. We're feeling like it's time to stomp a little 110-pound ass. And we'll do that after the break.
Line with Adam Carolla and Dr. Drew. 1-800-LOVE-191.
Love Line. I'm Adam. That's Drew. We're still taking your calls on the tragic events of the last 40 hours or so. And let's get back to the phone and speak to Desiree, who's 30. Desiree?
Hello. We're one of the weird people that don't have a television. We just use it for videos.
Okay.
So I can only go by my feelings on what's happening. And my husband's in Tennessee, and he's supposed to come home on Friday. I'm going to cry.
He got stuck in Tennessee, or this is part of how it was planned?
Well, this is work.
All right. He won't be home on Fridays. Forget about that.
He's already there.
Still, though, I don't care what ticket he has, it's going to be delayed.
Right. So from me, on this end, being like, okay, I'm a mom. I'm dealing with watching everything that's happened through what I read and what I hear and how people are reacting to it. But for me, I'm freaking out because it's like, okay, he has to fly home.
I'm flying on Friday.
It's just like,
at least I'm planning on it. And you know, I actually feel like I'm going to be safer this week than I would have been last week.
Yeah.
And he flew out to Tennessee in an unsafe world, and he's flying back in a safer world.
True.
Yeah. I've said this before. I'll say it again. I think we're further away from our next terrorist episode.
The farthest away.
The farthest away.
Yeah, right.
I really do. Because how these people work is they work when the giant falls asleep.
Yeah.
When the giant falls asleep, they run up and kick the giant in the nuts.
Yeah.
And then they run.
Yeah.
But when the giant gets kicked in the nuts and hops to its feet and starts looking around for some ass to kick, they're nowhere to be found. And rightfully so. I mean, these are people who do not have the technology. They don't have the numbers. They don't have the weapon systems. They're not capable. If they were capable of doing more, they would do more. They wait until we become complacent. And that's just what happened. Everything, you know, no one was thinking about it.
Yeah.
People were talking about anthrax in the New York subway a year or two ago. There's all sorts of speculation.
Mm-hmm.
But admit it, I think people had basically thought, nothing's happened. And it's been a while. It's been quite some time. And we became complacent, and they jumped on it.
Yeah.
And now everyone's at full alert. And this would be the worst possible time, percentage-wise, of them completing whatever horrible task they had in mind. So as far as,
and if they want to sacrifice themselves to get as many wives as possible, they got to be sure that they execute.
Yeah.
Yeah, and
you say wives, but it's virgins.
Virgins,
they get the bank.
Yeah.
So here's the deal, Desiree. I understand you're upset and you're worried, and I wouldn't want a loved one out of town either at this time. But realistically, there's probably no better, safer time for your husband to take a flight back to L.A.
Okay, so it's normal for me to freak out?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Everyone's freaking out about everything right now.
It's normal, but really, rationally, there couldn't be a better time. There's probably no better time to walk the streets of New York at night.
Yeah,
you know
right.
what I'm saying?
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay, Desiree.
Thank you.
Take
all
care
right.
of yourself.
Thanks.
All right. Let's talk to Brandis. Brandis?
Hello.
Hey, you're 27.
I am.
What's up?
I was sitting here trying to cope, you know, talking with my best pal, Mish, and she was telling me about the three men in the park that were arrested for celebrating. And
which park was that?
Some park in New York.
Okay.
Three, and I think they were Arabic men. I can't be sure. They were arrested because they were celebrating.
Right.
And that made me sick. I hadn't heard that before. And I just got to thinking, you know, when we get our vengeance on these people and do what we're going to do, and I didn't think there was any better way than to get on national radio, maybe we should just think about, you know, perhaps not celebrating it publicly or...
I hope
like
we
that.
Won't.
It made me so ill.
I agree. I hope we won't. I hope we'll just show quiet resolve and
because
just let it be.
They're going to mourn as well.
Yep.
I mean, it's going to be horrible. Innocent people will be killed, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
But we just thought that it was really important for people to not jump the gun and go, woohoo, because of course we're going to be glad in some sort of way, but...
Yep, agreed.
Publicly, we need to not, you know, we need to contain ourselves and...
Agreed.
Yeah, I think it's a good point, and I think we will.
We will what? Celebrate?
No, I think
we will be quiet. Yeah.
I think this country, like they did in the Gulf War, will. I remember the Super Bowl with the, you know, God Bless America and the American flags everywhere, yeah, and the, you know, the Blue Angels flying over the stadium and all that kind of stuff. I mean, it's a pride sort of celebration, but it's not a in your face touchdown dance
sort of
celebration.
Right.
And I think there's a difference. And I think hopefully, if and when any retribution occurs, or if a war breaks out, you're going to see a lot of pride around here, but you're not going to see a lot of, you know, name-calling, finger-pointing, and kicking people when they're down.
Mm-hmm.
Jesse?
How are you guys doing?
You're 23, real fast, buddy.
Well, one of the things I first wanted to say is to everyone who's been affected by this, the whole world is praying for you all, and we really hope that everything pulls through okay for as many people as possible. But a couple of things that have been important is things that you've already touched on, like, you know, we don't know who did this, we don't know it's Osama bin Laden, could be the IRA for all we know. But I think most importantly is how this is going to affect us in security. One thing I've been seeing online is talk of, like, air marshals like they have on some freight lines, where there's somebody on board who is trained, bonded, and armed with, you know, weaponry so that we can fight this kind of thing. And I think that's been a really interesting thought.
Israeli has that on all their airlines.
What's that?
Israel has that on all their planes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I had to cut them off because we're running late. Hey, my thought is air traffic has gotten out of control in the last 5 years, 10 years anyway.
Mm.
Look, if they got to start charging extra $150 to get to New York and it thins the herd just a little bit, so be it. So be it. I mean, if you take 10% of the people that are currently flying and put them on a bus or a train, and leave it to the folks who want to pay a little extra for the security and the marshals and so on and so forth,
fine,
the retrofitting that goes on in these planes, so be it. That's fine with me, and I'm hopefully that's the direction we'll go. We'll be back.
Okay.
All right, that is about it.
Yep.
Let's. I just want to answer Chuck real fast. He's 19. He wants to know what does he think our foreign policy is doing to anger these nations. And it's first, it's helping out Israel, which is their arch enemy over there, and aligning ourselves with Israel. That's number one. Number two, our presence, just having forces in Saudi Arabia is one thing bin Laden is really PO'd about. Mm. They don't want us there. So we're there in that area. That's one thing. And we're helping out their arch enemy. That is another thing. So it's between those two things, that's enough for them to want to retaliate. All right, we'll be back tomorrow night, and
maybe back to some more normal love line.
We'll be back to a more normal love line. I'm sure we'll still field some questions on this, but it'll be who's coming in here? Newfound Glory will be in here, and I think even though this will come up, I think we'll head a little more back on the old love line track. But if you have questions or comments, we'll get into it tomorrow night too. And until next time, it's Adam Kroll for Dr. Drew saying mahalo. A lot of these guys think when they die, they're just going up to bang the hell out of virgins. I mean, that's what a lot of that religion ascribes. And if that's what you believe, this is going to be real good news for you, because we're going to get you there just a little bit sooner than you thought.
This has been Loveline. The opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of the staff, management, sponsors, or this station. The producer for Loveline is Ann Wilkins Engel. Loveline is a presentation of Westwood One Entertainment.